One ring to rule them all. One ring to find them. One ring to rule them all.
Lion.
One ring to find them.
The great lion.
The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass. The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass. The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass. The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass.
Welcome to the Books from Earth podcast. Now you will relive your favorite science fiction, fantasy, and apocalyptic literature. If you haven't read the book covered by this episode, do know that there will be lots of spoilers. Enjoy this story again with us, the Books from Earth podcast. Time to relive a favorite book.
Welcome to the Books of Earth podcast featuring C.A. Fletcher's A Boy and His Dog at the End of the World. A post-apocalyptic coming-of-age, heartbreaking chase story for, yes, you guessed it, a dog. A chase by sea, a chase by land. Strange words that could be French, a baby bust, wolf battles, creepy people, a secret. Today, we relive the gripping suspense story about A Boy and His Dog at the End of the World by C.A. Fletcher with Books from Earth. I'm Josh, and I'm joined by my fellow Books from Earth podcasters, Lou.
Hey, guys.
Maureen.
Hello.
And Jack.
Hey, Josh.
All right. First, let's go back and revisit what this book is about. This is a somewhat dystopian story. I say somewhat because the protagonist's optimism and innocence and naivety prevent the usual dark, depressing, dystopian themes from working their way into our hearts. Story that takes place on Earth after an apocalyptic occurrence. The occurrence isn't explained much in the book, but it is called the Gelding. The Gelding took place maybe 100 years or so in the past. We're not sure. Basically, the human reproduction rate dropped drastically to the point where hardly any humans were being born. The human race dwindled to the point of perhaps a population density of one human per 1,000 square miles. We don't really know. The effect, though, is that humans are back to an agrarian society, hunters, gatherers, and farmers, living in isolated pockets. Electricity is gone. Industry is gone. We get a look at this world from the eyes of Grizz, who lives on a Scottish island. Grizz's family has the island and a couple of others around it to themselves. Their nearest neighbors are another family who lives on another island. Grizz's family doesn't travel much, so when our story really gets started, Grizz takes us on an adventure to the sea and down the coastline, and eventually penetrating the coast and into the mainland world, which Grizz and us have never seen. What happens is that one day, Grizz's family gets a visitor. He ends up poisoning Grizz's family and sailing away with some stuff. Most importantly, one of that stuff was Grizz's dog. Grizz is the first to wake up from the poisoning and sees that the dog is missing and the man is sailing away. Grizz gives chase in the sailboat. Grizz goes through many things on the voyage, and the man being chased, whose name is Brand, is fairly merciless to Grizz. Grizz meets Jeanne d'Arc along the way, a francophone who is quite jaded, yet also a survivor. Jeanne d'Arc is looking for the man who traveled through her village and brought a sickness there that wiped everyone except her out. So Grizz and Jeanne d'Arc combine forces. They fight off a boar, survive a night surrounded by wolves, find a refuge, survive a harrowing fall, and end up happily ever after of some sorts. Grizz eventually catches up to Brand in a compound run by a crazy cult leader. The compound is all about breeding, finding women who will make babies so that Earth can be repopulated. Brand is a sea trader who steals and collects and exchanges, but Grizz gets the last word on Brand in a cool coming-of-age way. Grizz escapes the compound with both dogs and someone unexpected. From there, they make their way back to Grizz's family's island, and Grizz is much wiser for the world than before. All right, Potters. Good hang, bad hang. Jeanne d'Arc, the francophone who becomes Grizz's companion and sometimes jailer at times in this book. Good hang or bad hang?
I would need a French to English dictionary. But I would, I love her. I want to hang out with her. I want to be around with, around her. She's like Joan of Arc, you know, she's amazing. She just strikes me as one of those cool women that I could learn a lot of things from, that's been through a lot in life, that, you know, she strikes me as one of those women that I just want to be around.
Yep. She does sound like she could take care of you in any environmental situation that arises. And she's really good at getting across to an English speaker what she means, even though she's speaking French. Lou, what about you, Joan d'Arc? What do you say?
She's a good hang. I took 6 years of French, which I've totally forgotten. But she would have to remind me, you know. And she is on the serious side, though. She's kind of, you know, she's been through so much. And she has a dark edge to her that you would have to soften up, you know, the more you hang with her, you know, just like try to soften her just a little bit, you know, but I would hang with her. I think she would be a good hang, especially in that world where you need her skills literally to survive.
Yes,
so,
she has major skills.
Yes, she does. She's a badass.
Zach, you want to hang with Joan d'Arc, or is she a bad hang?
I don't want to hang with her.
Duty.
She's too serious.
Do tell,
yeah.
Zach.
Well, also, she tied up the main character, and we don't know why that happened. I never knew, right?
We find out.
No, I don't think we do.
We do.
At the football stadium?
You missed that one. You missed that one on the quiz. Yeah. A tattoo.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And was it a tattoo or
was it a necklace?
Necklace.
Yeah.
But because of the language barrier, that would be hard for me to go through because I was wearing jewelry and I didn't understand why. And being screamed at in a language I didn't understand.
Right.
But I would say tough hang, because you could have been like, what's up with the necklace? Mm-hmm. You know, and talked it through a little bit, even at the end of a knife. Instead of just go straight to the tie-up in the middle of a football stadium.
She's an older lady. Maybe she just needs some stuff to get her kink on.
Definitely, that's definitely, if that's in play, that's not part of the hang I'm looking for.
we're young adult here. This is young adult literature. Getting.
And then, but however, at the end of the book, she is a real comfort to Grizz's mother. And so in the end, I don't know if I would have got that far with her. But if I had, I would have been glad I did.
There definitely would have been a payoff. Joan d'Arc is severe. She's severe. She's really pissed off that everyone in her village was killed by a virus. And she's on vengeance to go get the person. And she thinks Grizz is associated with this guy. This Freeman guy. And so just after Grizz gets stung by a bunch of bees, she gets tied up by a friend, and then they get encircled by wolves. So it's a rough night for Grizz and Joan for sure. If they can get through that, though, you can get through anything. So I think I'm leaning towards good hang if I'm in a survival situation. I don't know if we're just like in ordinary life. Joan d'Arc just might be too edgy, severe for me, too anxious.
Yeah.
Okay. How about Brand? Brand is the man who arrives on the shores of Grizz's family's island, and it's a very remote island in the Scottish Hebrides. He has red sails that announce his, you know, you can see him for miles. He's entertaining. He's fascinating. And then he poisons them and steals some stuff and runs along. Ugh, complex character. Jack, good hang or bad hang for Mr. Brand?
Good one. He would be a good hang, but no. Hear me out. Good one to think about. Okay? He'd be a horrible hang in the end. But kind of the opposite of Joan d'Arc. Easy to hang with. He can regale you with stories. He's probably a great joke teller. But then he's not to be trusted. And you pay for it. So, bad hang.
Lou, what do you think?
I kind of agree with Jack. If I didn't know him, I would really get along with him, right? If I didn't know who he was. Because you can't sense that no one could, you know, I guess maybe they were already suspecting him of something. You know what I mean? But he was such a good liar, you know, that he, you know, he got away with a lot of things. But to be honest with you, I couldn't stand him because what kind of person steals another, your dog? I mean, how can you steal a dog? Somebody else's dog.
Well, in this world, female dogs who could give birth were very rare. And Jess, the dog that was stolen, was a very valuable something. So Brand was heartless, and yet he saw how valuable this dog was.
Yes. But how did he know? Did he know that she could give birth?
That's a good point. Or maybe they just very few female dogs.
Maybe, you know, he just saw a female dog and just stole it.
Can I call them bitches? Can you call female dogs bitches? Or is like bitches now only a term for women?
Well,
that is technically what they are. Yeah. But I like, and I don't know, you may not make some fans if you do that. I don't care. Right. That is what they are and where the term comes from.
And can I say bitch without saying it like bitch? You know what I mean? Or can I just say the word bitch? And it's not.
No, you can't say it.
You can't. I do have a confession.
Yeah.
I have a female dog, and when she's bad, I sometimes call her a bitch. And I always feel bad about it. But I say it in a joking way. You know, if she does something really bad, I'm like, bitch.
Fair enough. Okay, Brand is good hang, bad hang, Maureen.
So I love the character of Brand. I can't wait to talk about him more. It's, again, he would be a good hang under conditions, and the conditions would be that there was not an end of the world situation going on, because I think if he was not out for survival, he would be a blast. The guy plays the fiddle. Like, that would be so much fun. Like, I would just love to hang out with him. He's got a ton of stories. He's very charismatic and jovial, and he's talented, and like that's somebody that I want to hang out with. But he's also a survivalist. So in the end, you can't trust him. So not in an end of the world situation would I want to hang out with him. I would not make him a part of my team.
Yeah, I hear you. So I'd like to play board games with Brand. I think that's about it. Just like some board games, and he could take a break, play some violin, some nice music. But I'm not eating his marmalade. It's poison. That's what he poisons the Grizz's family with. I'm like arm's length, but I think it'd be fun to play board games with, because he's a strategician. He's very smart, and I don't know, it might be fun to go out, you know, for a sail with him or something, you know, catch some fish or something. So he's a good hang and very with a lot of boundaries. He's just kind of tough, which kind of makes him a bad hang for me. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be like, just have to be so boundary conscious around him. Like, is he going to steal my wallet? Is he going to, I don't know. This is too nervous. He's definitely highly, highly entertaining. So I give him props for that.
He's got a story, if it's true.
Mm-hmm. And if he didn't take part in it himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Was he a Freeman? I forget.
No, he was part of a small little band. And some women went missing in his band and his family under mysterious circumstances.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he wasn't a part of the mysterious circumstances. That's why I like Brand. He's very intriguing.
Yeah, you just don't know.
He's an unreliable narrator himself. Okay, a good hang, bad hang for Grizz? I mean,
good hang.
Good hang, right?
Great
practical,
hang.
Straightforward, you know, interested in life.
He's going to find something fun to do wherever you are, you know, like, it's going to be great.
she agreed.
Would, yeah. Now she's see things I don't see and bring it to life for me.
We'll pop in and say, go back and read the book and stop listening to this podcast right now.
Mm. Not
if
right
you
now,
don't
like
want to be spoiled.
5 minutes ago.
Like, don't, nope. Because if you didn't catch it, good. Good. Mm-hmm. Go read the book. We have lots of spoiler warnings on our intro. Go read the book.
In fact,
it will be spoiled tonight if you haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've already spoiled the big thing. Can we go to the big thing since I've already spoiled it?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Big thing. Almost towards the very end of the book, we find out that the boy in the title is not the main character. And in fact, the main character is not a boy. And Riz is a girl.
So the author goes to great pains to say in the beginning of his book, there's some stuff here. Don't spoil it for other people. And I'm glad he did, and I thought it was great that he did. And if someone had said to me, Grizz is really a boy all along, it'd be such a different story. Mm-hmm. You know, but that it's or that Grizz is really a girl. Yeah. It would be a different story. Right. Mm-hmm. Looking back on the book, once I found out, by the way, I didn't see it coming until I was like 8 words before it, you know, like, oh, right. Like, I didn't see it coming at all. There were a couple foreshadowings.
Oh, there certainly were.
Yeah. Remember, she stands in front of the fire to warm herself while yeah. Jeanne d'Arc is there. And Jeanne d'Arc only sees her back. And then before the wolves, I think she was snatching the necklace and she was scared that Jeanne d'Arc would discover her secret.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Well, and the part that was really hammered at home for me was when Jeanne d'Arc wrote her the note and was like, you remind me of my daughters. And I was like, oh, there it is.
Oh, you saw it coming?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I never saw it coming.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But Jeanne d'Arc, there was that, you know, there was that foreshadowing of Jeanne d'Arc when he's like, she said, you lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had, even then I was like, you lied about what? I had no clue.
A good yeah. one. That's a good one.
Should we say why she was pretending to be a boy?
I assume that protection.
So that ties into the other big surprise. One of the things hanging over the story was that Grizz has been through loss. She'd lost a family member, her sister, and her mom snapped from it. And then when Jess was stolen, she was like, no, I've already lost a family member. I'm not losing another one, right? The way they thought that her sister had, I think, experienced like a fall, and she was dead. But in reality, she was kidnapped and ended up with the weird cult people at the end. And she was a girl. So her family, I think her dad was like, you're going to grow up as a boy so that you're not a female that's stolen the same way that Jess was, essentially.
I mean, her sister, not Jess the dog, but her sister.
I mean, Joy. Jess the dog. Jess the dog was stolen because she could breed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
So Joy was stolen because she's a girl. Jess was stolen because she's a girl. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were stolen as a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. Grizz doesn't, right, sorry. Grizz doesn't start pretending to be a boy until she goes on the road to chase.
No, before.
Before.
Yeah.
She's pretending to be a boy the whole
she's
time.
She's raised as a boy at her father's suggestion. Mm-hmm. So that because the value of a woman that can give birth, whether it's a dog or a human, is such that people will take you.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Could it also be that could be a self-limiting belief to like think that your main value is reproduction?
Oh yeah.
So there's more value you can have in the world and everything that kind of
thing. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I don't think the author did a ton with that. I think that was just kind of there, but I don't think it was a book about that. Like if it was Margaret Atwood, it sure would be.
What do we think about, I mean, in a way, Grizz is deceiving folks.
The world.
And yet she is really on Bran's case for being a liar.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a reason, you know, I think she's justified because the world she lives in is so dangerous for a young female, you know, that, you know, the deception is for, you know, is for a good thing. It's, you know, it's literally to save her life, you know, unlike Brand, his deception is just to get ahead of everybody else.
He might say different. He might say it's to save his life.
True.
Is Bran a good guy or a bad guy?
He's a bad guy. He stole another person's dog. I'm sorry. I have a dog. If you stole my dog, I would try to punch you down. I love my dog. Mm-hmm.
So, like, I love the character of Brand because it rolls into one of those, is he a victim of circumstance? Would he have become this if he'd not grown up in the way that he had to grow up? Or is this who he is? And this offers him the opportunity to just, like, live that way. And he's really an interesting character because he is an unreliable narrator, but he does have to scavenge in order to survive. He doesn't have a family unit that can farm. He doesn't have a family unit that can, you know, where everybody can band together to meet the needs of a day-to-day human being. So he is kind of, he does kind of have to live this life of, you know, of trading things, right? And of course he goes to the island to trade, but he ends up stealing the dog because the dog is so valuable. But another interesting question is, what if he'd gone to the island and there was no dog? You know, would it have happened? So I love the character and I like thinking about him because it is a hard world that they are living in. Would he have been a different person if he'd grown up in a softer world?
I think he would have been
my thought about Brand is that yes, he's a bad guy because he's stealing. Mm-hmm. And I get that he is a product of his environment, in some ways, a tough life and, you know, all that. But he has the choice not to steal. He's a skillful person. He can do lots of things, but he chooses to steal. And, you know, maybe he's not that bad. Maybe he took a dog thinking, oh, it's just a dog. Not knowing that you know, Grizz was really close to the dog and that Grizz would take it to heart and go after him. And then he kind of escalates it by burning Grizz's boat and doing other things and just kind of keeps escalating. And he doesn't want to deal with it. So he, you know, threatens Grizz and all that kind of stuff. You know, but he still stole. He didn't have to be that way.
There's a viciousness about Brand too.
As bad as the cult.
The way he does things, so vicious.
What are you thinking, Lou? Tell me more about that.
You know, like the way he poisoned the family, you know? There's other ways of stealing a dog, but poison the family, everybody goes to sleep, you know. What if they overdose? What if they died? You know? Then his dog is so vicious, you know. He's got that attack dog, you know, that dominates all other dogs. And we still don't know. Do you know what type of dog it was? To me, it felt like it was like a German Shepherd, but I don't know.
I feel like every dog would be a mutt because of the gelding.
Yeah, you're right. But it was a big dog, so it's, you know, it's a big mutt.
Is Bran a good guy or a bad guy?
In this circumstance, he's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy.
So what would be his old school Dungeons and Dragons? He'd be chaotic neutral.
Oh, no, he's chaotic evil because he is entirely self-serving. And, like, yeah, he's just, he's completely self-serving.
Yeah, he's got a code, though. Look out for me.
That would be...
I don't think he would go out of his way to do something evil.
Evil in Dungeons and Dragons is serving community versus serving yourself. It's not active destruction. Evil is literally a measure of selfishness. Evil and good are a measure of selfishness. So he would be chaotic evil.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, neutral is sometimes I do for society, sometimes I do for me, and then good is I always take the side of society.
I think if society was serving him, he would go along with that.
So neutral.
That's what I think, yeah.
Okay.
This book is about an apocalypse, and from a gelding, whatever it is, we are in a pandemic, and it has changed lives, maybe permanently, maybe temporarily, depending on who you choose.
I don't think, so Josh, Lou just accused me of liking Brand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't like Brand,
mm-hmm.
but I do understand him.
You admire him.
No. No.
But if you were in this book, you'd be Brand, maybe just, you just don't steal the dog, but you do everything else Brand does.
No. If I'm in this book and Bran's story is true, that he had family members go missing, and now he has taken on the responsibility of taking care of his family by any means necessary in his mind, right? Then I kind of understand him a little bit. Like if I had my two girls and my wife, and God forbid, let's say I lost one or two of them, but I still had some of them left. I'd be, whatever I had to do, I'd drive down to Virginia and steal Lou's dog tonight.
Right, right. So did Brand have to steal that dog to save his family?
See, that dog has major value. You can make more dogs with that dog.
Yeah. Did his family need that income?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if we really know that in the story.
So he was, the impression that I got was that he was from Norway or Sweden or Iceland.
Yeah, right.
Like, and the climate there is,
rough.
That's inhabitable if you don't have modern technology.
True, but there's been global warming. In this story, there's been global warming.
There has been global warming, but I imagine that their winters are very hard and they get cut off from the rest of society because you can't sail if it's full of ice. And so the winter time for them is going to be a time of incredible struggle,
mm-hmm.
So
having another warm body, something to help you hunt, something mm-hmm. to help protect. Right? I'm just mm-hmm. saying I get it. I don't think he's just a villain.
Mm-hmm. He tries the whole book to try to convince us and mm-hmm. to convince Grizz that he's not really a bad guy.
That's the part that gets me, Lou. Keep going.
That's the part that gets me too. He's just trying so hard. I'm not a bad guy. I'm not good. But hey, you're not a bad guy, but you steal somebody else's dog. Mm-hmm. Everything's... You're not a bad guy, but you poisoned the whole family.
You guys are making it sound he drugged the family to put them to sleep. For people who are just listening to this pod, think Brand is like a murderer.
So, here's the thing. The more somebody tells me what they are, the less I trust them. Like, and it's a natural instinct. If you're going to brag to me about all of the things that you are, I spend most of my time wondering what it is that you're not telling me. And that is the nature of deceit, is you tell the lie often enough that you hope that people start to believe it. And when you do so, you also do that for yourself. So.
See, I think a lot of it was for himself.
Yes. Agreed. He needs to believe in his heart that he is a good guy, yeah. Because he can't. So, but the thing is if you know that what you're doing is unjustifiable, then there's some part of you that is still, he's not a total sociopath. He knows that what he's doing is unjustifiable. So he has to justify it to himself. So he is making these choices and he's making these rationalizations and he's making these testaments so that he has some leg to fall back on, because he is desperately guilty, or he feels desperately guilty about the way that he behaves, which means that he is not all bad, you know?
Yeah.
If he knows that he's behaving in a manner that is unnatural to his core, to the core being of who he is. If he knows that he's behaving in a way that doesn't honor that, there's still somebody in there that wants to be good.
You know, so, as Grizz is chasing Brand, Brand gives Grizz all these warnings, you know, stay away, get away from me. And at first I thought, oh, Brand is a really mean person. He's probably going to kill Grizz next. Oh, but now that we get to know Brand a little bit more, it's more like Brand is like, oh my God. You're overreacting about a dog, and I don't want to feel bad, so just stay away. I don't want to feel bad. That's why I need for you to get away from me and stop chasing me. And he even says a quote from the book: "The world may come by and take a few things from you every now and then, but mostly you'll be fine." He says that to Grizz. So it's just sort of like, I want this to go away. I don't want my conscience to be present here. Grizz, you are reminding me that I did something bad. And I don't want to think about that. Please just go away. And Grizz won't.
I have a question for the pot.
Love it.
Who here owns a dog? Who has had a dog?
Me. I've had a dog.
You've had a dog.
You've had pets.
Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. Let's drill down on
look,
that.
Hamster. Look.
When you say I've had pets.
Yeah. She did not say dog.
Is it a dog?
She didn't say dog.
I had a family dog when I was growing up.
Me too.
But it was not my dog.
Okay. Imagine that family dog being kidnapped.
I didn't like the dog.
I knew there was more to the story.
And according to Grizz's...
If we were going to go with cats, like if somebody stole my cat, I would be very upset. Yes.
Dude, I'd be like, here's my address. I will leave the front door unlocked.
So
that's another thing about
Grizz says, if we are not loyal to the things we love, what's the point? And so Maureen's point is that if I don't love my dog, I don't care if someone takes it. And I don't have to be loyal to it. You know, if the dog was loyal to me,
the dog would die for you.
So can I take a quick detour? You guys ready for a detour? Or do we still want to accuse me of being in cahoots with Brand?
I'm not accusing you of anything, Brand. That was all them.
So, Josh, you just read a couple lines from the book.
Mm-hmm.
This has got some heavy lines.
I agree. Throughout
the book. No one's a monster in their own story. Monsters are just a matter of perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's good, right?
That's a good one.
Never trust someone who tells good stories. Not until you know why they're doing it.
That is one of my favorite quotes from the entire book. Those are words to live and die by. those are words to live and die by. Like, and forgive me, I'm a very cynical person. You guys know this about me right now. But the first thing I question with anybody is, why are they, what do they want from me as they are telling me this story?
Does anybody remember the first time they got lied to?
The first time I ever got lied to?
That you know about.
Mm-mm. Do you?
I have a memory, yes.
Oh, tell.
It's so embarrassing. But so I, you know, I was like, what? I don't know, three. And my brother, older brother, was, I guess, six. And Bubble Yum had just come out. Bubble Yum. The rectangular gum. It wasn't sure. stick gum. It
was the first of its kind.
It was the first of its kind. And it was, you could make huge bubbles with it. It was super sugary. And it was like, you know, this phenomenal novelty that I hadn't experienced yet. And my older brother promised me I would get some bubble yum, some grape bubble yum from him, if I would dance in front of the tennis courts by our house while people were playing tennis and take my clothes off.
Oh, no.
So I was three, so I didn't really understand taking my clothes off. But so I danced and I took my clothes off, and the lady playing tennis came by and said, "Put your clothes on, little boy." And, I, you know, pulled up my clothes, put on my clothes really quick, and then I went for my brother for the bubble yum, and he was just laughing his head off at me, just laughing his head off. He had no bubble gum to give me, didn't give me any. And, you know, like Grizz, I went into rage, and I would have chased him hundreds of miles down the coast for my bubble yum.
That's funny. That's pretty good.
You know how, you know what happened next? Next time I was at the supermarket, I shoplifted some bubble yum. When I was of course, I got totally busted. So, like, smacking a great bubble yum, and I couldn't wait to be alone to do it. I had to do it right in front of my mom, who's the supermarket with me. She's like, "Where did you get that bubble yum?" And I was like, "And what bubble yum?"
That's
pretty
funny.
So, what if Grizz, like?
So you sound like Branch to me. Something bad happened to you.
So I had right. to deal. So I had to squirt.
Yeah. So my advice to you, Josh.
Not to dance and take my clothes off at the same time.
No. No. It's to put on your clothes, little boy.
Oh, no.
No, it's not funny. Like, I think someone does. Okay?
You should have shared that.
Oh, yeah. No. Cut deep.
Just pour that. You should have shared that, Josh.
I can cut it from the top. That's something else, being lied to. So Grizz was lied to for the first time, and so she just goes berserk.
Yeah, that's probably true. First time she knew about it.
Well, so can I bring up some more stuff? Is... Like, the thing is, though, she suspected him of lying, and it was because in her nature, she was already deceitful. Like, and I think that you kind of have to be a liar to know a liar. And the bigger you lie...
I do agree with that.
Yeah. The bigger the liar you are, the more you're good at spotting lies. And so
what's her Dungeons & Dragons thing?
She is neutral. In her alignment, I would say that she is chaotic. She doesn't always follow the rules, but she'll follow the rules if they suit her. But I would say that she is neutral. She goes for the benefits of her family and for society, and is not entirely self-serving. She is self-sacrificing, but she...
So she's neutral?
Yeah, she's probably true neutral.
Or neutral good, maybe.
Neutral good. Yeah. Yeah. I like these discussions. These are good, Jack.
Do we want to talk a little bit about how these folks lived in an apocalyptic world and we're in a pandemic now, and any parallels between living now in a pandemic and the COVID pandemic and the world that Grizz was in? The one thing that stands out to me is isolation. In pods or your bubble, and how some folks have decided to be together, but that's like their bubble. They won't take their risk any farther by allowing anybody else in. And here in Grizz's world, they kind of live on islands, you know, and they keep their distance from other people. And that's, there's an isolation to it. Grizz doesn't seem to mind the isolation so much, although she's got some wanderlust for sure. And maybe she doesn't know any different. Some of us deal better with isolation than others. So that's one parallel I'm noticing between how the book is and how life in the COVID-19 pandemic is. Anybody notice anything else?
Quarantine. Social. They use quarantine and social distancing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I really liked, the one of the scenes that really struck me was when Grizz was under the pool table and just taking her time, like enjoying being under the table with the string lights and the picture. And, you know, in that moment, I had the thought that it's like, that is something that you can only, because, you know, they're scavenging for, you know, their needs as a family. But there's no time stamp on it. And I've noticed that, like, what my life has turned into now is there's the ability to take my time and enjoy the little moments much more. I'm not rushing around looking for a crazy commute. I'm not going a billion places after work. You know, I really have the time to sit and enjoy cooking myself lunch. I have the time to enjoy talking with my neighbors on the way to my mailbox. You know, I have the time to enjoy a walk every day and observe the seasons. And that scene where she's under the table, I thought to myself as I was reading it, I was like, that's a different life that I am just now beginning to get a taste of, where you have the time to sit and be in the moment. And I'm sure that there are other people who can do that, but I've never done that before. And I was not aware that that was even something that could be done until the pandemic happened.
Sounds nice.
It really is.
Yeah.
My neighbors are great.
Yeah, I've had a taste of that too. Slowing down, simplification, more natural tempo.
No, I've got none of that. None. Sounds really nice.
The problem is I still go shopping. You know, I do all the shopping for my house, so I have to go to Costco. I got to go to Wegmans. I got to go to school. And these are crowded with people, you know, in lines, and I don't have any of that.
No, I've got totally super, super busy going in my world between work and kids and the responsibilities that I have to meet.
Well, there are some apocalyptic tropes in this post-apocalyptic book.
There are. There's some. Yeah. So we're on real quick on Maureen, your thing about pace and all this. Grizz's life before this event happens, like, she just kind of hangs out on their little island and she gets her work done. And then she like goes on little mini adventures with her dogs. And it reminds
me.
And her family. Yeah. And it reminds me of like what you hear about settled society versus hunter gatherers. Like the hunter gatherers had more calories, more diverse diet, less work than the settled societies. And it makes me, you're just like triggering those thoughts of a simpler time, which I've, you know, never really experienced. Except for when I was young and didn't have responsibilities, you know. But, yeah, I mean, that part of it, I could totally have gotten down with that part of the apocalypse that they went through, you know. That part was cool.
Apocalypse tropes. We've got humans facing extinction. Seems like a normal apocalyptic thing.
The gelding is new.
That's a new kind, right?
Yeah.
We haven't heard this kind. And the explanation for the gelding is maybe something to do with some scientists experimenting, and somehow something happened with the experiment that
would be a cool book. It'd be a totally different book. I'd want almost another author to write it. You know, like I would want Michael Crichton to write that one.
Mm. Right. Yep. Some other tropes, the cult-like group intent on breeding. We've seen this in 28 Days Later, the movie. Remember the army
every
folks.
Every woman's fear.
Yeah, that place looks so scary.
And it's there because it's valid.
Like, because that's what would happen. Yeah. The group in Station 11, I think, was like a cult-like group. I forget if they were intent on breeding, but
yes,
you can definitely. How about the Dragon Riders of Pern?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those knights on dragons. Refuges. I love the refuges in apocalyptic stories. And here they find the homely house.
I love that house.
John Dark and Griggs find the homely house. With the phonograph and the peach tree.
Mm-hmm. And the little and the nice couple upstairs who went together to wherever they're going.
Yeah.
Well, and welcomed the future. That was the part that really touched me. Because it's like, I've got my stuff, you know, don't touch my stuff, you know. And they're like, and they're just like, have at it. We're gone, you know.
Enjoy our stuff. And there was such hope in that letter that there would actually be humans left who would like come along. And
yeah, that was good. I feel like that was their like their cottage in the woods, you know, and they lived in like a big city, but they stayed there and they went there for the weekends.
I'm thinking, what is my refuge if, you know, things get really bad? And I'm like, ah, shoot, I don't know.
Disney is the only place I want to go right now.
Refuge in Disney.
Yeah, my refuge is Magic Kingdom. Please get me on some roller coasters. Stop shaking your head at me, Lou.
Costa Rica for me. I just want to get away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wouldn't mind Bonaire. I'd love to scuba dive for the rest of my life. That would be nice too.
Okay. Costa would be good. Costa would be good. A lot of fruit, wildlife to eat, fishing.
I'm going to the Hawaiian Islands, I think.
Ah, solid. They got good scuba diving there.
They do. And then when you run out of electricity and you can't repressurize your tanks anymore, you can just snorkel.
Yeah. Free dive. Free dive.
Yep. A couple of things.
I changed my refuge. If we're going to run out of electricity, I'm going to go back to Malawi.
Aww.
They already know how to live without electricity, so that's where I'm going.
I'm going with you.
Yeah, I'm going with you.
That sounds about right, actually.
There's a ton of food.
Get some anti-malarials. We'll be good to go.
Yeah.
Okay, there's also a secret society of scientists. I feel like that's kind of, you know, there's always like this evil scientist in the background who does some harm. And here we have the Freeman Group, and we're not quite sure what they did, but maybe one of their experiments to try to put human life into machines kind of triggered something bad. And
I have no idea what that was about.
Me neither.
That's another book I would like to read.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Freeman?
Yeah.
Well, there is a guy named
Freeman Dyson.
Freeman Dyson, and his book is referenced in the last couple pages of this book. Mm-hmm. And Grizz is reading his book. And one of his things was he thought that there might be a way to get the human soul or something inside a computer. And
that's a common sci-fi trope.
It is. He was he's like an actual scientist who did all kinds of actually valuable scientific things for the scientific community. And so it is a common idea in sci-fi. And of course, we know with sci-fi in 100 years, it might not be sci-fi. It might be reality.
Sci-fi and sci-fact.
So I just finished a sci-fi book that I'm considering recommending to the group that is like 10 to 15 years in the future.
Ooh, please bring it, Jack. I'm really excited.
Okay.
Other tropes, wild animals, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Reintroduction of technology, like the record player, like discovering some technology that, you know, for us would be way antiquated, but for them was actually fascinating and awesome. In a corroded world, a world where things have fallen apart and there are dangers. There's a scene that we all really liked in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, you want to tell us about it?
Sure. So we were talking earlier, Josh asked me what my favorite scene was, and it was when Jeanne d'Arc falls through, I'm picturing it being like an oil tank, like maybe it was a gas station was there at one time, and the asphalt is worn away, and the dirt above it is worn away, and there's just this empty oil tank, and maybe some valves in there or something. Some pointy stuff, as we come to find out. And, you know, if you've ever seen, like, old metal, like an old muffler, just rust all the way through. that's kind of what this empty drum was. And she takes her horse over it and falls through. And there's an interesting moment where two people who live in this world know exactly what to do, which is to put the animal down quickly. And there was no, you know, they didn't speak the same language, but they both knew that that's what needed to happen. And then, you know, the rescue, the return to the cottage. That part was, you think it's the end of Jeanne d'Arc too. Fortunately it isn't. Yeah. Very intense, scary, visually, well executed piece of the novel.
Agreed.
So intense. It was so intense. And they had been doing so well in this world, surviving so many things to be, this was nothing you could have foreseen. That's the perils of the apocalyptic world. All right, here we go. I'll read it. I was looking closely at the ribbed and bristly stalk of a particularly thick plant as I passed, wondering if it was hairy bristles themselves that were mal, when there was a crack and a yell and then a horrible crunch and a thud, heavy and meaty enough to feel it through my horse's hooves, and I turned to find Jeanne d'Arc had disappeared off the face of the earth. I looked around the other way in case I hadn't seen her cut around me, but I was alone beneath the strange-looking plant heads. Then Jip barked and ran across and began to paw at the rim of what I now saw was a hole in the vegetation covering the ground. Jeanne d'Arc and the horse had not only vanished from the face of the earth, they had fallen into it. I dropped off my horse and ran to the edge of the pit. They were both still moving and still alive at that point, and though it was hard to see down into the darkness, even before my eyes adjusted, I could tell it was very bad. Even before the horse started screaming, even before I saw it trying to stand on brutally snapped front legs, struggling to get itself off the vertical length of a rusty pipe that had gone straight through it as it landed. Someone long, long ago had buried a water tank in the field, a big one. It had stayed there as the field turned into a wilderness of hogweed, and then it had corroded and waited within. Jeanne d'Arc had taken the wrong way around a stalk and fallen through the roof, jolted off the saddle as her horse impaled itself, landing in about a foot of water. I could see her face looking back up at me, fish mouthing in shock. So I knew she was the right way up and not about to drown. I ran for the pack horse and grabbed the rope she kept in one of her panniers. I looped it around the base of the thickest hogweed stalk I could find and ripped back to the hole. Jip was barking and Jeanne d'Arc was shouting my name, though the splashing and the screaming of the horse made it impossible to hear what else she was saying. I quickly tested the rope to make sure it was anchored, said a prayer to a god I don't believe in, and slid down the rope into the tank, which made Jip bark even more urgently. Everything in the tank happened badly, and it happened fast, and even now I can't quite remember the order of things. It's like a broken pot in my head. I can see the shards, but they're not quite joined up into a complete object anymore. It was dark in there, and the sky above the hole in the roof was bright, so my eyes kept trying to adjust to the stark contrast in light levels. It's probably good that I couldn't see everything clearly, but seeing it in fragments and flashes made it even more like a nightmare. Jeanne d'Arc had blood streaming from her head, and her nose was smashed sideways. She was trying to crawl through the black water towards the horse, but something happened to her leg. I tried not to think of the horse, but it was stuck and struggling on its spit of rusted pipe, and its front legs were bent in all the wrong directions. It huffed pink bubbles of blood and foam as it panted and screamed. Its rolling eyes were the whitest things in the world, brighter than the sky above. I stumbled to the water to Jeanne d'Arc. She had managed to throw herself across the horse's neck. It bucked and twisted in her arms. I thought she was trying to comfort it. I wanted to shout at her. I remember I was angry. At least, I think I was angry for a flash. I wanted to tell her it was beyond comfort, tell her that what we had to do, what I had to do now, fast, before anything else, but I didn't have the words. I just had the knife, already in my hand. Without knowing, I'd drawn it. Even now, I can see it as a living nightmare, like I'm still there. A fragment of her face staring at me. I think she doesn't understand. No, Grizz, she shouts. I think she doesn't want me to do it. I think she doesn't understand how very, very terrible the hurt to the horse is. Then I see she isn't trying to comfort the horse. She's desperately trying to reach her arms around it. She can't. Her fingers point at me. They shake with the tension. They stab at what I should be seeing, what I should have thought of. I hurl myself across the tank and try and pull the gun from the scabbard. At first it won't come, then the poor horse spasms as it tries to stand one more time and the gun slides free. Vite, Grizz, she screams and buries her head in the mane of her horse, looking away. Vite! I lean over her and jam the barrels awkwardly behind the horse's head where the spine meets the brain. It's an awkward position. I don't have the butt properly seated on my shoulder. I don't have the time for perfect. I pull the trigger. As I said, it's not unusual for old ammunition to just go click and not fire. In this case, that prayer to the god I don't believe in must have found an ear because the metal tank bucked and exploded in a thunderclap. The butt of the gun jerked off my shoulder with the recoil and smashed into my cheekbone. The horse dropped and went slack as the death twitches set in. I was deaf. Ears ringing. I didn't know yet that the recoil had split the skin over my cheekbone. I didn't know yet that I would have a black and bloodshot eye for many days to come. I still don't know if the faint sobbing I could hear was me or John Dark. It was probably both.
Man.
For realsies.
Some good writing.
Yeah. And so much of the book is got this up-tempo, slow-tempo, up-tempo, slow-tempo. All right. Well, let's have a word from our sponsor for this episode. And when we return, we'll do Hollywood.
This episode is brought to you by the geniuses behind hot dog water. They've got a new product called Something Smells Fishy. Something Smells Fishy, the internet's number one fish-scented product line. Fish-scented breath strips, fish-scented plug-ins, fish-scented Christmas trees for your car, fish-scented perfume and hand moisturizers. Is there anything you love more than the smell of fish? I didn't think so. The manufacturers of Something Smells Fishy agree with you. I recently purchased a fish-scented candle. It was a gift to my wife. And I'll tell you, since we bought that, there's been a very moist, fishy smell that lingers in the master bath of our house 24/7. It's awesome. Or try the fish-scented breath strips, perfect for low tide, for that low-tide smelling breath. Next time you think, what's that fish smell? Look around. I bet somebody nearby is chewing tasty fish-flavored gum. Double trout. Tastes just like freshwater fish. Oh, and your breath? That smells like fish too. To learn more, go to www.somethingsfishy. That's somethings, no apostrophe, just somethingsfishy.com/books from earth. That's our code. If you use that code, you're entitled to a free fish oil-based lip balm to get you started. So right now, the weather's changing. Maureen mentioned the seasons. It's a little cold. I took a walk. My lips are chapped. I put some of that fish oil chapstick on. Couldn't have been better. Something's fishy, people. From the geniuses that brought you hot dog water, something's fishy. Now, back to the pod. Let's talk about casting. Lusu.
I have one.
All right, we're going to let you kick it off.
For Grizz, Elaine Page.
What is she in?
Ellen Page?
Ellen Page, I'm sorry. She's in Umbrella Academy.
Inception.
And what else is she in? She's in a lot of things. Yeah, she's in a lot of things. But I think if you shave her head and dirty up a little bit, she would look like Grizz.
That's good. I couldn't get past Millie Bobby Brown, even when reading it. And
Millie.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah.
Stranger Things.
Right. Stranger Things.
Yeah.
She was perfect in that.
So yeah, she's an obvious. How about also from Stranger Things, Max, the redhead.
I'm partial to redheads.
She also like the red hair, blue eyes thing is sort of like when I think of like the UK, the London, Irish, Scottish. I think you know that could be like the markings of someone from that place in the world.
True.
But yeah, Millie is an obvious guess. Ellen Page, I think she can look young enough. But she does look very young.
She looks very young.
Yeah.
I think if you shaved her head, put put on some good makeup, she could do it.
Who you got, Maureen?
I totally forgot about the casting. So
then your job is to say to be a tiebreaker.
Okay. I also wasn't paying attention because I was trying to fix my microphone. I heard Ellen Page, Millie Bobby Brown, and who was the other person?
Sadie Sink from Maximum Stranger Things. She plays the tomboy character. Yeah.
I would say Ellen Page.
Okay. That's good. Let's get our agent on the phone. Okay. All right.
Lucy's going to be pissed.
Lucy, who do you have for Brand? You got for anybody? Brand,
I don't have anyone for Brand yet.
Okay.
I got some Brand. But yeah, I did you go first since you love Brand so much?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Put on your clothes, little boy. Okay.
That's all you have to say.
I'm going to go with Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. I probably said his name wrong, but he was the Game of Thrones Jaime.
Oh, okay. He plays a good complex character. Yeah.
Yeah. Put a beard on him. Mm-hmm. Give him some long hair.
Did we know the color of Bran's hair? I thought it was red.
He is a redhead.
Is it red?
All the evil people are always redheads, man. Always. Mm. Little Mermaid was the first good person.
Hero to all redheads.
He was a redhead.
Potters, I am a redhead.
There you go. How about, none of these guys have red hair. How about Jeff Bridges, Jeremy Renner, Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe because I don't think this guy's skinny.
Jeremy Renner is skinny.
I like Jeremy Renner. I just like.
Well, you're choosing. We're submitting names. You're
Jeremy
choosing.
Jeremy Renner.
Okay.
Sorry, and it has nothing. It just I just like Jeremy Renner, and I want to see him in more things.
Okay.
All right.
It has nothing to do with appropriateness to the part.
Okay, we're just going full. Okay. No tryouts. Got an easy one here, Jeremy.
Yep.
Who do you have for John Dark?
So we all saw Lost, right?
Mm-hmm. Best.
I got lost in Lost.
Wow.
Good. I couldn't take a couple episodes and I got lost.
Early on? You mean you haven't really watched the show?
I haven't watched the show.
Oh, I feel jealous.
This show.
Yeah. You've got like six seasons of TV just sitting there for you.
Yeah.
And it's
I saw great. It and I got lost and I was okay. Like, I'm lost.
We'll do an Amazon Prime watch party. You and me. We'll set it up. We'll go through the series. It'll
Isn't
be
that good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the Mount Rushmore of great TV.
Yeah. And Terry O'Quinn does some of the best acting ever.
Who's just that?
John Locke.
So he's not even my favorite character. Benjamin Linus was my favorite character.
Oh, also amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's
so... In Lost, there was a woman named Danielle Rousseau, who was French.
Yes.
And she had some screws loose. The actress that played her name is Mira Furlan. And that's who I would cast in that part. Josh, who do you got for Jeanne d'Arc?
I've got two. One is Marion Cotillard from Inception. She plays Mal. And she was also in Batman. She's French and she has the whole accent thing going on. She needed to be roughed up a little bit, I think, for this. There's also Melanie Laurent. She was in Inglourious Basterds, Six Underground with Ryan Reynolds, By the Sea with Brad Pitt. She looks like she can pull off that looking haggard, tough, serious role. She was in Now You See Me. Those are my pictures.
Rousseau. She's a total badass. Just total badass. Yeah.
I haven't seen her in a long time in anything, so she might be interested. All right, Josh, kicking it back to you after casting.
Rapid fire round, okay? Here we go. Jack, we'll go in the order of Jack, Lou, Maureen. Okay, here we go.
I will try.
Okay. Where would you like to reside in a post-apocalyptic world? An airport, such as Station 11, or an island like where Grizz's family lives?
Island.
Lou.
Island.
Maureen.
Island.
Very good. Okay. Would you chase your pet to the end of the world? Jack.
No, sorry. I'm looking at Lou. That cat right now.
My dog, yes.
Very good. Maureen?
Maybe.
Jack is chaotic evil.
I can't believe you guys. I'm so sad right now.
I would for my girls because they love their cat.
There you go. Okay.
I would chase to the end of my neighborhood.
Okay, name one thing about this apocalyptic world that you like and one thing that you don't like, Jack.
I don't like isolation, but I do like the return of nature.
Okay. Lou.
I don't like dog feeding.
What do you like?
I like
reuniting with dogs.
Yes.
That's a happy ending. Tell me about happy
ending. Happy ending. Yes.
Maureen.
Don't like no access to antibiotics. Do like the time, the more time in the day.
Okay. Surprise factor of the big reveal. So this would be the one where you find out that Grizz is a girl. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being blow your mind away, so surprised. 1, just maybe a little bit surprised. So you're also going to be asked to rate other things. The other things you're going to have to rate are Gandalf's return, okay, in the Lord of the Rings series, and the fact that we find out what Trent Kamalok's race is in Kim Harrison's books, and the Lost Wares, whatever they were, returning from back in time in Pern, the Pern books. Okay, so that's what you're going to be asked to rate on a scale of 1 to 10. Okay, Jack. So 1 to 10, Grizz is a girl.
7.
1 to 10, Gandalf's return.
I haven't read the books.
Did you see the movies?
I don't remember them that well.
Wow. Okay, we'll let you stay on the podcast. 30-day warning.
I was judging.
You probably don't know Trent Kalanick's race reveal either, because that would be book 2 of Kim Harrison's series. We did book 1, Dead Witch Walking, so we'll give you a free pass on that. Okay, 1 to 10, Pern's Lost Wares return via time travel.
2.
Okay, all right. Lou, Grizz is a girl, scale of 1 to 10.
8.
Okay, Gandalf's return.
2. Everybody
knew it was coming. Oh, okay. Trent Kalamak's race reveal. Do you know? Did you read Kim Harrison's second book?
I did not read it, but it's on my list.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I would rank that already as an 8 or 9.
Oh, pre-rating. Very good. All right. Nice. And Pern's Lost Wares returning from time travel.
That's a 4.
Okay. All right. Maureen. 1 to 10, Grizz is a girl.
5.
Gandalf returns.
5.
Trent Kalamak's race reveal. 10. Okay. Sweet. Pern's Lost Wares return from time travel.
1.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Josh.
Yeah.
I'm going to do yours. All right. Okay. So 1 to 10, Grizz is a girl.
2.
1 to 10, Gandalf.
10.
1 to 10, Kalamak.
8.
1 to 10, Dragon Riders.
9.
Nice.
And now people who listen to the podcast know I'm not good at seeing foreshadowing. I think part of the impact factor for me on Grizz as a Girl was I was kind of like, oh. You know what I mean? It didn't change the plot. It didn't change how things turned out. It didn't. You know, when she finds that her sister's alive, I was like, oh, I would give that like a 6. But finding out that Grizz was a girl was just kind of like, oh, that's a neat hook. Oh, he fooled me. The title says boy. But it didn't change much for me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What makes this book special? We'll go in reverse order. We'll go in reverse order than we just did rapid round. What makes this book special? Maureen.
I loved the exploration of lying and liars. It is one of my favorite themes. I love it. I wish it was explored more often. You know, it's something that I look at in my own life. It's something that I loved that.
Excellent. Lou, what makes this book special?
For me, being the only dog lover, I think Jack likes dogs. For me, it was the relationship between a man, or a human, and a dog. And I think it's a special bond, which I've always had as a child, you know. And I actually, when I started reading this book, I got really frustrated. Because stealing a dog is almost like kidnapping to me. I was like, my God, who would steal a dog? I couldn't get past it. You know, so I had to read till I was like, okay, let's go. You know, and the ending was just so beautiful for me. So I love that relationship. It's, you know, I have a dog. Me and Susie are like best friends, you know, and she loves to, because I'm warm, I'm always hot. And when she's cold, she sleeps right on my legs. I'm like, dude, get away from me. Because I'm always hot, but she won't, you know, she won't do it. We're best friends.
Is that when you call her a bitch? Like, bitch, get off my feet.
I know. So I do at 2:30 in the morning sometimes. But I love her. I love her to death. And I just can't imagine anybody taking her. I can't.
Jack, what makes this book special to you?
So what I'll remember about this book as a big post-apocalyptic reader is the gelding. I think it was a new spin on the end of the world. End of the world happening really slow, taking a whole generation, and everybody seeing it coming and not being able to do anything about it. Pretty cool. I also am raising two girls with my wife and want them to read this book someday when they're ready for it. They're too young now, so they can see Kick-Ass Girl.
Yeah.
What made this book special for me is the kind of seeing the world through Grizz's eyes as she discovers things. So even when she goes to like a neighboring island and goes with her family to go a Viking, I was just like, that would be so fun just to go explore these neighboring islands and seeing what you could grab. And what makes it special for me is that exploration. She goes down the coast into these worlds she just doesn't know. The whole seeing the world new and fresh like that, that really came across the narrator. That really made it really special for me. Well, this Books from Earth podcast featuring A Boy and His Dog at the End of the World by C.A. Fletcher has come to an end. We'd like to remind you to check out Something's Fishy. Somethingsfishy.com. You can find out more about it at booksfromearth.com. And I recommend their lozenges. There's Something Fishy. Something's Fishy lozenges are great. If you're on a date and your date eats fish and you're starting to possibly make out and you don't want to tell her she has fishy breath because it's a date, or he that he has fishy breath because it's a date, you're not there yet at that honesty level, you pop in a Something's Fishy Salmon Lodge, Cod Lodge, Tuna Lodge. They got
the
all
lodge
different flavors.
I do like the Cod Lodge. Pack.
Yeah, you get a variety of shrimp lozenge, and then your breath will match and it cancels each other out. You won't smell it. It won't be a turn off.
Do they have shellfish? Like crab?
They have crab.
They do with or without Old Bay.
they have like a Alaskan king crab.
Yeah, snow crab. They got a bunch of different kinds.
Do they have cleaning products for my microwave?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. These are the geniuses that brought you hot dog water. I mean, you don't think they thought of that?
Perfect.
Well, hot dog water is
a glass of hot dog water. There's nothing more nourishing.
My kids chug hot dog water like it's going out of style. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to subscribe, rate us, or visit our website, booksfromearth.com. Earth makes great books. Come relive them with us. So long until next time, all you Vikings. This is Josh, Maureen, Jack, and Lou signing off.
Bye.
Good night. Jack, where do you get these ideas from?